Hi, today is February 25th, 2017. This is Mobile News Podcast number 196. I'm Todd Agosa Ward, my good friend John Westfall, and a good friend Don Sorcinelli is back with us. And we've got a couple of little things, one big thing that I wanted to talk to Don about, especially, and I think John has a gripe.
Yeah,
He has a rant, yeah.
Uh-oh.
So the first thing I wanted to mention is pretty short, and that's related to my move last week from my ISP's email service to MicrosoftOutlook.com Premium, which seems to have gone pretty well. I mean, it's not for everybody because it collapses your multiple email addresses into a single email inbox. If that bothers you, you can create filters, I guess, but it's not the same as having truly separate inboxes, but it's okay for me. $20 a year, hard to complain. But related to that is, okay, now what am I going to do with my GossipWalrus.com website? Which has been down for 3 years, so it's not like I'm rushing to, you know, migrate it. But when my ISP disappears at the end of this month, yeah, I think end of February, I was thinking about restarting my GossipWalrus.com blog. And I didn't want to create another WordPress site, because that is the path to madness. So I considered doing a Tumblr, but you know, with Yahoo going to Verizon, that might disappear. So it turns out Medium has a custom domain option. For a one-time fee of $75, you can attach your custom domain to a Medium blog and use it. So I'm giving that some thought. I mean, you know, $75 for one shot, that's not so bad. Something to consider. I'll be thinking about that over the next week or so before my website disappears. Next up, in Ars Technica UK, they're reporting that the ITU 5G specs are out, and I think it's 20 gigabits total. So don't get too excited, folks. That doesn't mean 20 gigabits to your phone. That means a total of 20 gigabits to the antenna, the site that you're connecting to, which will be split up by 4 million people, so you won't be getting that whole 20 gigs of bandwidth, but it should be interesting. I don't know what frequency they're using. I didn't check on that. But if it's one of those high ones, it's going to be good for like 100 feet, so they're going to need a lot of antennas. I don't know. Don, have you been following any of that? I have not been following.
Yeah, I've just been figuring that 5G stands for how much money I can, you know, 20% more marketing than 4G, you know, carrier and saying exactly. They're going to support it. I mean, we're already hearing some of the first, you know, quote unquote 5G tests, but it reminds me, as a developer over the years, my favorite analogy is HTML specifications. Oh. You know, when as soon as I can remember years back when we hit HTML3, immediately, there's an HTML4 spec. Yeah. Everybody said they were developing towards it, and the bottom line was everybody was interpreting their vision of what HTML4 was going to be. And so we had browser wars, and we had all kinds of competing specs. It feels the same way now with 5G. We're already, I agree, there's quote-unquote specs out there being proposed, and there's obviously a definitive architecture, but meanwhile you have every carrier and their brother, you know, turning around and as long as nothing's finalized, they're going to interpret it their own way. Right. So we'll just have to wait and see how it kind of plays out.
Yeah. And speaking of how things are playing out, you know, Mobile World Congress is coming up soon, like next week? I don't know. Pretty soon, yeah. I think. And it used to be a showcase for a variety of platforms. You know, Windows Phone used to be there, and BlackBerry. And so now it's like they might as well just call it Android World Congress. I don't think there's anything else that's going to be there.
Well, it's interesting. I can speak to this from there's several facets to it. I can speak to it from a business perspective too, from an enterprise. You've got everybody who has never mind mobile OS platforms, but when you talk about device management platforms, mobile services, everybody and their brother shows up there. So I agree. The OS platform, it's by and large an Android world showing up there. But I, as a matter of fact, when you said it, I know it's this week because I have co-workers that are heading out. A lot of friends of mine are actually heading out representing some other companies. it still is the big dog. I mean, expect to see, like you said, you'll see hardware manufacturers make announcements. I think you may see some things, not necessarily big from Google, but some things around Android from Google. But then you're going to get a lot of PR from different companies. They've started to take MWC as their opportunity to launch new services or new partnerships, things like that. So it's kind of changed a little bit, but some of those things are now, because there isn't a whole lot of competition on the hardware, not necessarily the hardware, but on the OS side. Yeah. There it seems to be more the services and other products that seem to be getting a little bit more attention. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to seeing what comes out of it.
Yeah, you know, I don't know, John. Last year, what did we do mobile? Did we even talk about it last
year? I don't know if we really talked much about it last year. There was not too much that we weren't impressed by pretty much anything last year. Yeah. WWDC, Mobile World Congress, CES, Google I/O, nothing really.
We were a tough crowd
us last year. Yeah, we were just very cynical. And
let's just admit it. 2016 was the year you guys weren't impressed. Okay, no. That's what we'll sum it up as.
Yeah, that's
the year you were.
Now, I will say that some of the early stuff I'm seeing kind of float out pre-Mobile World Congress looks intriguing. I saw a picture of a BlackBerry unit that's got a, you know, keyboard as usual, and makes me wonder if BlackBerry should even keep trying at this point, but at least they are, so good for, you know, the old
it's
Canadian.
It's running Android, though, right?
It is, of course, running Android. 5.0 Nougat. So I will be interested to see what we see from the big players, but as Dom points out, I think a lot of the smaller players, this is still a big deal for them because it's a time to push their offerings that are not giant devices or giant things.
Right.
Yeah, I think what you're going to see is some of the big pushes are, again, device management is becoming all the rage, mobile device management, but you're now including with Windows 10. You're seeing more and more of, it's not just a phone world anymore, just a tablet world. It's a true device world. I think you'll see more announcements around that. I think some of the little things that I'll be curious to see if anything comes out more on, and this comes back to when I was talking about possibly some things with Google and Android. You know, there's been the recent push with Android on RCS standardizing and trying to bake it into A, the OS, and B, into now what was Messenger is now Android Messages. And they're trying to, when you look at what RCS is, it's taking SMS to the next level and trying to compete, to be honest with you, with iMessage.
I'm so confused by Google's messaging message.
I think they've developed their messaging strategy from Microsoft and their Paint and Photo application strategy. Mm-hmm. So somebody has to outdo the 9 or 10 photo and imaging apps that Microsoft had at one time. No, what they're doing is, it's interesting because if you get a chance and read up on rich communication standard, it's supposed to be what SMS evolves to. Mm. But the problem is SMS became, you know, carriers looked at what can I do to provide a competitive advantage. And so what did we get? Fragmentation at that level when it came to some of the communication standards with these platforms. They were baking things in, whether they be applications, whether they be technologies. What did it allow for the rise of WhatsApp, Facebook Messenger, something that sits on top that is a little bit more uniform and in some way, shape, or form competes with iMessage? Because in the end, let's be honest, that's what everybody looks to as a standard now for messaging, you know, for its capabilities. RCS is supposed to, it's an Android thing. Google's trying to make it very clear. It's not a Google thing. It's an Android thing. But what the spec's been proposed on and off for a few years. It's SMS, the next, with a lot of its capabilities. And it looks like they're finally getting some traction. We've got a couple of carriers, including Deutsche Telekom, is agreeing to follow that. What you need is at the operating system of the application layer, OS layer to a certain extent, but the carrier also has to support it. And so you've seen the first couple of partnerships come out. Supposedly, here in the U.S., Sprint is agreeing. It's expected that T-Mobile, because Deutsche Telekom is agreeing that T-Mobile will follow suit. You might see some more around that, and you might see more of what Google's vision is at Mobile World Congress for it. You might get to see some demos on what they're trying to do. And again, like I said, it's trying to incorporate, it's trying to go after the iMessage and even to a certain extent FaceTime crowd with RCS. So yeah. Those are the kind of things you might see now that we don't have Windows Phone competing with Android, competing with, well, what else has there been in recent years? BlackBerry, when it was still, you know, available. yeah, you know. There's got to be the different things. And like I said, the application layers, device management, services, mobility as a service is a big thing. You know, now it's,
but, you know,
you see a lot of that.
We do have messaging fragmentation, though. I mean, you know, some people use Facebook Messenger, and some people use WhatsApp, some people use Line. And, you know, you can't talk to each other from this. It's for those people who either didn't use messaging back then or are just simply too young. It was, 10, 15 years ago when you could not send a text message from Sprint to Verizon if you had two people on different carriers.
Yep.
Or, you know, whatever it was. I mean, I remember I had to draw a chart for a blog I wrote saying what carrier could send a text message to which other carrier.
Yeah.
It was wild.
And it's, you know, again, the problem that still existed once everybody finally bought into the SMS as a standard, the next thing is, okay, what do we do to take it to the next level? I mean, Apple was smart. They said, we'll go our own way, build it in at our layer. Of course, that immediately sandboxes you to an Apple world. But what did they do? They made a compelling next step for messaging. As long as you're talking to multiple, you know, at first it was just iOS devices, but obviously it's been expanded outward, but still in the Apple realm. You know, it's the idea that 140 characters is old. It's tired. let's have pictures. Let's have special effects. And in some cases, iMessage itself is a compelling sell for some folks to choose or stick with an iPhone.
I should mention, I think, you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Google Voice can finally receive MMS messages. Photos. I mean, you know, pictures.
Yeah, in a way.
Yeah,
I've had it work on and off. I've had it still go to my email occasionally instead of going into the app. But
here's an interesting RCS. One of the things in the standard, when you talk about the little things mean so much, mm-hmm. One of the things that people, they normally won't until you bring it up. One of the things that people like as a differentiator on iMessage versus SMS mm-hmm. is knowing that a message is delivered, almost knowing a status of a person, that you see mm-hmm. the delivery, and if they're responding, and again, it's one of the reasons why people, if they don't use iMessage because their friends are using different phones, what do you go to a Facebook Messenger where you can see the status? RCS is one of the things that's part of the standard is it recognizes in the same way that iMessage does.
The other thing
it does is it, like iMessage does, and then again, it's at the application layer. It's how you visually represent it. Another thing that's once people understand it in iMessage, that's good is I see a message is blue or I see a message is green. Mm. If it's mm-hmm. green, that means somebody who's not using iMessage and it's dropping out as standard SMS. The RCS standard in and of itself automatically, there's a determination, and that's why the carrier gets involved in supporting the standard. There's a determination automatically whether or not somebody else is, their device is RCS compatible, and if not, drops it to SMS, and it can give a visual indication. So it's funny, RCS does a lot of things that iMessage does. It almost seems like it's, here's how we catch up in that platform. And to a certain extent, I would love to see that happen, only because I think it's a big, I mean, it's a pretty big disparity, you know, between, and it's a differentiator between the Apple world and the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and true. I would love to see iMessage still support what it supports, because there's things on top of it, and eventually maybe even support that, just as they, so they work with the carriers on it, and there'd be more uniformity to it. Will they do that? I don't know. You know.
Well, and I think about the way I use iMessage, and, you know, in my circle, you know, being in the education world, pretty much 99 out of 100 of my colleagues have iPhones.
Really?
So, yeah, iMessage is just, you know, it's weird when I find someone who's on Android. And so, but the interesting thing is, there's probably actually a peer pressure sort of aspect to that, because if I'm sending a group message through iMessage, mm-hmm. and that one person pops up green,
yeah.
it's almost like they're a second-class citizen at that point. You know that, you know, they're going to lose messages.
What do you mean almost?
Work right. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. I think about it at work. There's one person in my one working group that is on Android, and just nobody messages her. Like, she's just not on any of the group messages. Wow. Because people don't go, you know, it's a pain with her. She gets only half the messages, or she replies and it just goes back to the first person. It doesn't stay in the group chat.
So what we're seeing here is the birth of iMessageism. You iMessages.
But the sad thing is, it is absolutely not in any way in Apple's interest to stop that.
No, and absolutely not. No.
You know, you could have, I don't think we're going to get to the day where iMessage and whatever is the next incarnation of SMS live nicely in one app. So that's why, you know, on my phone, I've got a folder of what I just call messaging. It's every messenger on the planet, and it's all one that there, so I can get notifications just on the folder level. And yeah, people contact me through every conceivable messaging platform, from, you know, WhatsApp to Facebook to Signal to Snapchat to,
So it's, basically, Apple's got to come up with something like a holographic display that's iMessage only. And then when your Android-using colleague catches up with an RCS-enabled Android phone, they'll go, ugh. She can't send and receive holographic messages. What?
You're only you're only two-dimensional. You know, I will guarantee, if that's what they talk about at WWDC this year, we'll talk about it. We'll be impressed.
I think we just have to get used to doing that a lot, just going, oh, I can't believe you don't have that capability.
Yeah.
This is also the person in that working group that won't download Bitmoji either. So, you know, all the rest of us are communicating these days primarily through Bitmoji images.
Really?
And yeah, she's just not getting with it. Yeah, it's, let me tell you, when you're dealing with the craziness that is the modern college student and the things that they think are kind of acceptable for their own futures and things like that, you need something to relax. And sometimes the frustration Bitmojis are sometimes, you know, the most popular thing to use.
Okay.
And it mortifies the students that we use it. So that helps too.
And talking about frustration, how do you like that segue? So this is something Don pointed out to us. It's the Windows 10 Creator Update Edition 10, whatever it's called.
Enterprise Edition Community Release Preview Alpha Beta Gamma Delta.
I'm so glad the old Windows Mobile naming committee is still alive and well and now working on
full employment, you know. But anyway,
you mean the acquisition of name committee, subcommittee, decision-making body? Yeah, you know.
here's what it is. We're now dealing with Windows 10 is, you know, it's not about – it's funny because it's a rock and a hard place. They don't want to do the old released R2, you know, SP1, all of that garbage. So they're saying it's Windows 10. But you still have to, major updates, you still have to do something around it to make it a differentiator. So in this case, what did they say? Windows 10, they decided this major release, and it's one of two in 2017. I thought that was kind of interesting on the internet. Like last week, somebody said, there's going to be two updates in 2017, and the world went, oh, this is all new. And no, last year they said there were going to be two updates in 2017. One of them they decided to brand, a major one. They refer to it as the Creator's Update. And a lot of it is around their 3D modeling technology is going to be included in here. You know, but it's, think of it in the old days like a big service pack. But we're getting, it looks like we're getting close to that being released. And it was supposed to be. The plan always had been a springtime. But Paul Thurrott noticed in one of the latest builds for Windows Insiders, what seems to be their little show, their little tell, you know, like in cards, you know, in poker, you always ask, so what's the somebody's tell? Microsoft's tell when they're close to a release is their Insiders build suddenly dropped the watermarking on the lower right-hand side. And suddenly with their latest release, the watermarking magically disappeared. The last builds that went out this week. So everything seems to be falling in line to we're getting close.
Yeah, when I updated my Insider release, it said, welcome to Creator Update, or, you know, whatever, Creator Edition, whatever you call it, and I was like...
It's been doing that. Yeah, it's been doing that after each build, and it'd been doing it now for a little while, but then the other day, like you said, the other day, the build finishes, you go in, and it's like, something doesn't look right. And on those Insiders builds, they tell you they watermark it with evaluation copy, right. And they give
lower
you the
right
long string of lower right hand. That went away, and with that going away, we're probably, and again, you think about it, we're entering March next week. They had been looking at a springtime, so it looks like we're right on track. We're getting close to the end point for that, so it'll be interesting to watch how that comes around. I wouldn't be surprised. Considering, while it's not a major event, in terms of some sort of conference, Microsoft's going to be having a lot of celebrations around the 20-year anniversary of Visual Studio next month. They'll be doing a lot of online events, and my gut tells me that we'll probably hear something on what the planned target is for, you know, target time. For Creator's Update is around then.
You know, John and I discussed this months ago when the Creator's Update was announced, and it seems like a really weird thing to focus on. I mean, 3D, sure, it's cool. Sure, it's probably the future at some point, but right now it's kind of a minuscule part of the market.
Well, I think the idea behind it, here's what we're looking at. We're looking at we don't want to do the same old naming convention. So we got to say there's an update coming. We got to give it some sort of name. It happened that this was falling in line with the tools and the 3D modeling are falling in line with the overarching idea behind HoloLens and augmented reality and all those tools. I think, and I wouldn't be surprised if one day we're going to find out what they said is, what the heck are we going to name this thing? The blank update. What's the blank? What are we going to do? What are we going to do? Well, we're giving a lot of tools around creating things. Let's call it the Creator's Update. And then everybody went, okay, let's come up with something better. And nobody came up with anything better. So the Creator's Update, it stuck. I don't think it was the driving force. It's just they needed a name really bad and really short order. And they probably had a few drinks, and this was about the best thing they could come up with.
You know, it's funny, because Microsoft has great project code names, or code names for projects, right?
I mean,
Windows, for example, were city names or town names for many years. Windows 95 was Chicago, and there was Longhorn and Whistler. If they had just done that, it would have been fine.
Yeah.
You know?
I think it's interesting, because immediately the next question is going to be, okay, once we get past this one, you're supposed to have another pretty big update before the end of the year. What are you going to call that one?
I have three potential names for that one. So if Microsoft's listening, they can steal one of these. The Windows 10 Publisher Lover Update for that niche market of people who still love Microsoft Publisher.
Yeah,
The Windows 10 Pencil Pusher Update. You know, to go back to the core enterprise market. And, of course, the Windows 10 just stopped using XP already update for those people that just haven't moved on yet. So
I honestly think, since you were going based on names, I think it's staring us in the face. They could have had the Northwind update.
Yep.
They could have had the Contoso update.
Yep. Yep.
They could have had the AdventureWorks update.
Yeah,
come on.
Yeah.
We got to reuse those. We got to reuse those fictitious business names somehow, some way.
Well,
you know?
I still like the city and place names. You know, back when they were using Whistler and Longhorn and I guess that's a mountain.
I just wonder how many confused sysadmins tried to go to contoso.local or contoso.com, you know, as they were reading Microsoft white papers, and how many confused MS, you know,
right.
SQL admins tried to use Northwind's database.
Database. There was a sample database, a Northwind database that used to be able to download.
Yeah. Yep. For years, that was always what was used for access, actually, was the sample database for access. Yeah. Well, the funny part about that is that a coworker and I, and hopefully he'll listen in on this, and he'll listen to the podcast, and he'll get a kick out of it, because we were just talking about it again.
Hopefully.
Yeah, I'll get him to listen in. But he and I were talking about a couple of years ago. We were in a meeting with another coworker, a friend of ours, who was trying to get some references around some of our services. And we're sitting in the room, and he's like, don't we have any references off the top of our head? Any references off the top of our head? And my friend turned around and goes, I think we can get Northwind Traders to sign on for a rep. And without even hesitating, I immediately turn around. I'm like, well, yeah, but what about Contoso? While we're at it, you know,
so
you think
reliable.
We can get... And the third name in, the guy who we were talking to, who was a partner person, was smart enough to all of a sudden go, wait a minute, I recognize those names. But we at least got a couple of them in, and he was buying in for about a minute or so on it.
Well, I think Microsoft should go back to place names, and they should be meaningful. So, you know, they can go back and rename Windows 8. Oh, I don't know, you know, what was
Albuquerque?
It?
Shouldn't have taken a left.
I was thinking, where was that nuclear meltdown that occurred in Russia years ago?
Chernobyl.
Yeah, see, that could have been Chernobyl, the radioactive edition, Windows 8.
And no, actually, I would have picked, if you wanted a city, I would have said Albuquerque for 8, so that everybody could have said, I knew I should have taken that left-hand turn at Albuquerque.
And isn't that where Microsoft started? It was somewhere in New Mexico, right?
Yeah, where about, because they incorporated originally, wasn't it? They filed papers in New Mexico, but maybe it was Santa Fe, actually.
Okay,
it might have been
that actually makes sense. But anyway, what I'm leading up to is when they get to, when they finally get to, Windows on ARM, and you have to use the Windows apps, you know, you can't use 86x86. Well, I guess you can. It's gonna be, but they can call it the Alcatraz edition. Now you're trapped.
There you go.
Yeah, unfortunately, they already used Strong Arm years ago, so you can't use that one again.
Yeah,
but
so just in case, guys, if you're hearing any sound in the background here, it's basically, since we're not getting snow here in the Northeast, it's decided to get an epic monsoonal rain at about 9:45 at night. Yeah, it's coming down in buckets. But this is the cold front that's coming through that will lead us to from our temperatures, our balmy 60s back down into the lower 40s. So,
you have my condolences. Here in Hawaii, and, you know, I mention this all the time, and since obviously nobody in Hawaii listens because nobody complains, it drives me bonky when it hits about 76, I see people in parkas and scarves.
Oh, gee. Yeah.
And I want grab them and say to them, do you not know where you are? This is ridiculous.
You're talking to the guy who grew up in South Florida, where in February, when it was 65, 70 degrees, people looked like they were dressing up for the Iditarod, the sled races, the snow dog races. Yep. Yeah, I know.
So, any rate. So, you know, people are, you know, just like, I'm cold. I have a fan on, you know. I have my little USB fan plugged in and I'm pretty happy. But in any case, moving on to another Microsoft. It's my not useless tip of the week. This is actually useful tip of the week, in case you didn't know it, like I didn't know it. So, Microsoft has had this free app for both Android and iOS for a long time now, I think maybe a year, called Office Lens. And I only, because I'm not the smartest person in the world, as I guess everybody knows, I only discovered this past week and a half ago, maybe, that Office Lens can OCR documents, and I did not realize. I was just using it to shoot whiteboards and, you know,
I feel so bad. I would have told you if you needed it. Sorry about that, Todd.
Yeah, but I did discover it, and I had to use it. It was really important, and it really came through for me. So a tip of the hat to a company I much malign often, but thank you, Microsoft. This is a super useful – it has always been a super useful app, but it was extra super useful in the last week and a half for me. So really, really good function, and it worked really well. It not only OCR'd it, I think, correctly. It was like 95% correct, I would say, maybe more. But it actually retained the fonts because there are two different fonts on that page. So when it brought it into Word, that was pretty amazing.
I got to give credit when you think about it and look how far back, John and Todd will speak to it as well as anybody. Microsoft's work with being able to take things and do OCR type work.
Yeah.
How many people forget that it was over a decade ago that you used to be able to write on a tablet PC, lasso it, and then do the OCR with that? And it did a pretty good job for 12 years ago.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's one of the reasons why when I saw Office Lens first offered as a tool, I was in love. I was like, oh my gosh, hopefully they'll leverage what they learned. Hopefully that didn't hit the waste bin like so many other things.
Yeah.
You know, what they seemed to do a pretty good job with. And yeah, it saved me on a number of occasions. Plus, as you said, Todd, I live by it for whiteboard captures.
Yeah.
I don't think I leave a meeting room anymore without pulling out the phone and doing an Office Lens snap, and whether it goes into a OneNote, which is another tool lately I've been back into using as the ultimate repository of, I shove everything into OneNotes lately, and being able to capture screens and things like that is really great with
Absolutely.
So it's a good tool.
Go ahead, John. No, I actually will say that OneNote I've started using over the last year again, but only when I want structure. I still use probably 75% Evernote because I just want something quickly tagged and in there, and I don't really care how it's structured. But OneNote, if I'm putting together something, especially if I'm putting it together for other people, it's really nice to have the structure of a notebook with sections and tabs and all those things.
Well, can I tell you, there's been slow and steady, and again, classic Microsoft, very subtle, almost unannounced, types of improvements on quick but still organized. I've been using it a lot for things like, especially if you're using tools, Outlook is one, putting meetings into OneNote so that you can take the notes over there and get a lot more rich and gather things. They're doing a lot more with where it used to be, you got to dump it, and then you're expected, like you said, with structure to file it. Now when you go to dump it, you can very easily see most frequently, it's like an MRU to which sections, you know, and tabs to dump it into. And that's one of the reasons why I started using it more again, was that I could very quickly not only dump something in there, but I could dump it and route it to where I wanted it to be without having to do a lot of searching. They've done some improvements on it, and yeah, it's my problem is my OneNote storage is growing massively because like you said, I used to use Evernote for the same reason you did, John, and again, same thing used to happen with me. My Evernote files used to get tremendous I dumped everything in there. It became like, you know, it became a garbage bin. Yeah. And then I'd have to go in and do my spring cleaning every once in a while. It basically allowed me to become a digital hoarder.
I like being a digital hoarder, so I embrace that. But my Evernote corpus right now is like 6.5 gigabytes.
Wow.
So I have a lot in Evernote. I don't see myself moving out of Evernote anytime soon, but I do. I'm always the fan of use whatever works, and so now that I'm kind of 50-50, half on Mac, half on a Surface Pro 4. I'm just sort of finding the best tool for use scenario, use by use.
Yeah.
But I will say, so this actually lets me segue into my rant. Todd is very happy with Office Lens. So this semester I've started presenting in my classes completely off of my Surface Pro 4. And that has worked really well for me, except I wish I had a good whiteboard app. And Microsoft announced one last June, and then it was released, and now it's gone.
Really?
if you go to the window, the page where, because basically in June you find all these articles saying it's going to be out, and then in December, January, there's these articles saying, yeah, it's out, here's a link to it on the store, and you click on that link, and it's a dead link. And wow. You can't search for it either. So I don't know what happened with Microsoft Whiteboard, but given what we've seen with things like Office Lens and out in OneNote, I was hoping it was a very useful whiteboard sort of app, and now I have nothing. And I think
we're back to we've come back around yet again to the discussion on Microsoft and their strategies around a segment or around a type of application, or when you look at education, the work that they're trying to do with SharePoint, the work that they're trying to do with Office 365 for education, the work that they're trying to do with Surface Hub, the work that they're trying to do with Whiteboard. I just get the feeling that yet again, what we're seeing is the downside of having a lot of creative people in a lot of different areas horizontally, with becoming very quickly stovepiped at times and not knowing what everybody else is working on. And then what ends up happening is what you see. What are you doing? You're working on that? No. We want something like that over here. And then suddenly something goes away, and then it reemerges as something else in an entirely different context. OneNote for educators. Do we see Whiteboard suddenly appear as a feature and add-on in that? It's frustrating because unlike Google, where something stays in beta for a long time and then suddenly one day somebody says, that's just been in beta too long, let's kill that bad boy. After so many years, finally one day without any fanfare, it becomes an actual product. Microsoft stuff, like I said, seems to be, we get these, the stuff appears, and especially I think of how many times Microsoft Research stuff appears, disappears, and then suddenly a year later reemerges someplace completely unexpected. It's almost like it went underwater and you say, well, this is where it should surface. And then at the other end of the pool, suddenly it pops back up and you're like, how'd you get over there? I wouldn't be surprised if that ends up being the case with all the emphasis. When you talk about it, it's Whiteboard and all the other stuff on education, it's either been subsumed by something and it'll pop up someplace else, or we'll hear about something later on. It's frustrating. I agree with you.
Yeah. So, John, it's
the lack of communication when that stuff happens that drives you crazy.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what happened, John, is they want to market something different to you. Instead of that Whiteboard app, they want you to buy a Surface Hub, which you can wirelessly connect from your Surface Pro 4, which you already have. And I'm just reading your use case here in our show notes, and as far as I can figure out, a Surface Pro 4 and a Surface Hub does exactly what you want. You just got to cough up about $8,000,
$9,000, $10,000. I was just about to say, what's your problem? Get with the program, John. You're missing out here.
Well, and so Todd may have noticed my second piece on there that I have at the bottom, which is basically what I'm calling my Franken wireless presenter setup. This is an idea that I've been playing around with now that I've had. So back, last year, I was using iOS for all my presenting, and so I would hook up my iPhone to to our archaic presentation setup, which is still VGA input and 3.5 millimeter for audio. I would hook up to that, and then I would go wander the room with an iPad and present, and just basically flip with the wireless presenter mode on there. Yep. Well, now I want to wander the room with my Surface, right. And so I purchased last week the Microsoft Wireless Display Adapter, which is basically a Miracast receiver,
right.
And a active HDMI female to VGA male adapter. So I'm going to, it's supposed to show up Monday, and I will give an update next week, but this is my goal, is to try Franken Wireless presenter setups. See, like a wanderer.
Okay. I know other people who've done exactly what you said, and they did get it working. So you should. Although, statistically speaking.
Although I'll say two things. So first, John, you're reinventing the Surface Hub because that's what the Surface Hub basically uses Miracast. Yes. And two, I can't get my Surface Pro 4 to work with the Surface Hub. It will not cast wirelessly. So it's not foolproof.
Well, we'll see if your Surface Pro 4 that's owned by the state of Hawaii works differently than my Surface Pro 4 that's owned by the state of Mississippi.
Well,
so obviously. You know, maybe different states of ownership will help us out here.
Okay. Well, that's about it, except, let's see, I did want to say something about Microsoft Office Lens, and now it slips to mind that Brain died. But anyway, I wanted to thank Don for taking the time to hang out with John and me. Always fun, Don.
Always fun.
And we will try to get back to you soon. And again, I forgot my useless fact of the week. I did remember a useful fact for this week, which is Office Lens. I can't think of my useless one. Go ahead.
Johnny Appleseed's apples weren't meant for eating. They were meant for making into alcohol.
Really?
There's your useless fact. Yeah, there's your useless fact of the week.
Wow, I never knew that.
Did I just hear a mic drop?
All right, gang. And with that, I'll bring to a close podcast number 196. We're heading on home to podcast number 200. We'll talk to you next time.